Welcome to Ray and Tay Today. Woo! It's a wild Wednesday, y'all.
Feeling a little empty today, a little lonely. We'll get into that in a minute. But this is Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, and I'm Eric Taylor. Very superstitious because baseball is the most superstitious game in the world, as we know. And, wow, just we'll get into it. Very interesting. So join us, man. We're having a Hall of Fame show, as Ray and Tay likes to provide for you. Hit us up at 718-664-9098. Send us some of your emails, you know, even what you think about the Hall of Fame and RG3, you know, whatever you want to hit us up. RAEANDTAY today at gmail.com. And you can tweet at us, Facebook us at the same thing, Ray and Tay Today. We appreciate it all. And, hey, Tay, you know, I mean, Ray, we got a shout-out. Ray won the Ray and Tay Today college football. You know, it was he only won by one. He got 20 right. I got 19 right. And
yes, sir.
My nephew, Corey, did his thing, had 19 right. William Truth, 19. You know, some other people lower. But do you have the guy that won our fantasy, our NFL pick'em? We have an email, but we don't know who he is, so he can call in and win. You know who you are if you won. You have
we got to shout him out, because, look, anybody that wins fantasy, you know, we got to definitely give him a shout out.
Well, yeah, so, with the pigskin pick him. Yeah. So he won by a couple. I think Ray missed the last week because he went away. I think I came in second or third. My buddy John Marchese was in the top four, maybe in third. So, you know, but this guy, I forgot his email, but he came in first place. So we just
yeah. Well, hold
to
on.
Tell him how to get
to us, and I'll talk about the guy who won.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, he can give us a call, obviously, or he can email us. That's the 718-664-9098, or you can hit us up at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. And, you know, we want to give you your props and definitely even, you know, maybe let you get on the air because you were the pigskin pick'em champion.
Yes, no doubt. So he goes by Green Lantern. And Meatman 57, Green Lantern 1094. So we give shout out to our boy, the Green Lantern.
There you go.
So, good job, listen. Joey, we got him down as Joey. Good job picking. Hats off. You know, anytime you're a winner, we take your hat off to you. Now, if you use performance-enhancing, you know, materials to get your picks right, we won't say anything about that because that's a controversial subject today. But kudos.
Well, let's
to
get
you
some of this little news out of the way. I mean, obviously, RG3, they're saying he had successful total reconstructive surgery, ACL and LCL. You know, we'll see. You know, Adrian Peterson was a miracle, so don't everybody count on that. Could be, you know, 6 to 8 months, could be 9 to 12. We shall see. But, you know, he's been through a lot. You know, he had a surgery at Baylor. So, you know, this isn't his first time around on this horse and pony show. Now, we got some interesting things. Obviously, you guys probably already know this, but Rob Ryan, defensive coordinator of the Cowboys, was fired. I think it's a mistake, but, hey, we'll see what happens.
Bill Cowher said he wants to come back. He's open to coming back. I think
not this year,
really
just in the future.
Serious, he needs to put his hat in the ring because every year that goes by, that Cowher's on the sidelines. I think that the NFL
I don't think he's going to come back unless there's a great job next year. But now Ryan Longwell signed with the Seahawks because their kicker got hurt in the game. And your boy Mike Zimmer is interviewing with the Cleveland Browns. You know what I find interesting, though? And also the Browns are interviewing the Panthers OC, who has been, you know, really hot lately, Chizinski. But the Bears have interviewed about 18 guys already, and they're saying they're going to go up to about 25. That's never happened before.
They're taking this.
I mean, they're taking it to the next level, man. That's crazy.
Methodical. I mean, ultimately, you have to have 3-4 guys that you really, if they said yes, you have to have a gut feeling that these guys are your guys, and you backfill that list with guys in case to your first 3 or 4 say no. I can't believe they're equally interested in 15 guys. Then you're just indecisive.
Nah.
I mean, I think they're just not.
They're not sure what the heck they want to do. Now, we know the Jags and the Cardinals both hired new GMs, so Malarkey could be on the hot seat down there. The Jags got Steve Kelm, and we'll see what happens with the Jags because they brought over the guy from Atlanta who Malarkey was there, but they're saying, you know, that prior relationship doesn't mean that Malarkey still won't get the axe. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. Bill's name... Patine, D.C. Coordinator from and Hackett as the OC. So that's interesting because Hackett, he's been around, right? Paul Hackett, and then
the professional coordinator.
The Jets D.C. Defensive coordinator went to the Bills. So the Jets, it looks like the Jets are going to hire Dennis Thurman. They're going to move him up, which will be popular in the locker room, you know. So that's kind of interesting in that sense. Obviously, hockey, the owners, you know, verified the deal. Now the players have just got to do it. So we move on with, you know, with the hockey and hopefully
also
it gets going.
But in basketball,
oh,
it looks
yeah.
like the Seattle city that got robbed of a franchise is now going to take the franchise from Sacramento. So you feel good for Seattle. Because they really didn't deserve to lose their Supersonics. I mean, that was
yeah,
a good team and a good city. And just they got – I mean, Oklahoma City probably deserved a franchise, too, after they took, you know, the Hornets after Katrina. But Seattle didn't deserve to lose a franchise. Now, in Sacramento, it looks like the Maloofs have been asleep at the wheel for the last 5 or 6 years. And they were thinking about moving the team to Vegas and moving the team down.
They're
to
more
Orange
concerned
County.
About their casinos, I think. So
yeah, so unfortunately, Sacramento loses out on
that's
this.
That's a good fan base. Good. Fan
it
base,
is. The thing is, how many teams do you need in the state of California, though? Because an hour and a half away, you know, you've got the Golden State Warriors, and of course, you've got the Lakers and the Clippers. So you know. The Bay Area can
yeah.
really support two teams. I don't know, but yeah, I hate to see that franchise lose it. I mean, that was such a coup when they got the Kings from Kansas City to move
yep.
up there to Sacramento. So that's a good solid fan base up there too. So mixed emotions about that because definitely think Seattle needs an NBA franchise ASAP. I hate to see them
oh, yeah.
take.
They
I hate
have
to see them
great
take
fans.
One away from Sacramento though.
Yeah, and they have great fans, as we see in football. Now, look, we got some interesting things. The Raptors, they're interested in trading for Rudy Gay, you know, even though Phoenix is talking about it. So it seems like a lot of people want to jump in there. And our man, Kevin Love. Oh, yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well, they're saying
that
Zach Randolph. So Memphis is going to get rid of one or both of them.
Yeah,
I don't know
what's wrong with Memphis.
Over the
I think
cap.
They're bugging. And their ownership has been switching around. So who knows what they're thinking about? Because to me, how do you trade two of your best players? But your boy, who's on your fantasy basketball team, is undergoing surgery, will be out 8 to 10 weeks, Kevin Love.
He's got to go.
That hurts.
Well,
that
you're
hurts.
Always scared when it's your hand and you break a bone twice. So he came back, sat out 3 weeks, played for a couple weeks, and then broke the same bone. That's the middle the bone that leads up to your middle finger. So I guess he won't be giving anybody the middle finger anytime soon. But, no, you hate to see that, yeah, especially on a basketball player. Your hands are so valuable. I mean, you catch, you shoot, you know, you get slapped on the hands. So, yeah, Kevin Love, we wish him a speedy recovery because he's a great young player. And, you know, what an interesting, you know, that could be a segue, right? Came out of UCLA. And we got a little segment coming up in a little bit about another UCLA player, a little UCLA
yeah.
Bruin action.
Or where you at, that is ours, not ESPN's or Chris Carter's, but our Ray and Tay's where you at. We'll look at an old UCLA NBA guy, a point guard. That's a little teaser. But I guess I don't know. You want to get into this baseball, or you want to talk about Alabama first, man? Maybe we talk about Alabama.
Well, let's get it
first.
Out of the way. Let's get the BCS championship out of the way. It was 2 days ago, so we haven't been on the air since. But let's give our props to Alabama. They take care of business. You thought it would be a closer game. I thought it would be a blowout. I didn't anticipate it'd be this much of a blowout, but it was just men versus boys.
But we both
picked
Bama.
We both picked Bama. Bama just was a better team. They were bigger, faster, stronger, more skilled, deeper. You know, I don't know. You just saw a mismatch of, you know, almost epic proportion. So it leads you to believe that what we were calling for in the middle of the season, that Oregon-Alabama game, would have been the best game. But you can't take anything away from Notre Dame. They beat everybody in their way, so they deserve to
be there.
And
maybe Georgia was the best matchup, right? I mean, Georgia, Alabama beat Georgia, like, last play of the game, you know?
Yeah.
But you know what stood out to me, though? We got to give some love, and he's returning as a senior, and now he's got the most popular girlfriend in the world who's being followed
Lord.
By LeBron James. But A.J. McCarron, right, 20 for 28, 264, four touchdown passes. The boy plays some football, no interceptions. And he hit up the freshman receiver who's only going to get better, Ray Cooper, 6 for 105. Ah, two TDs. Bama solid, man.
Bama
is really solid.
Rushed for 250 and threw for 250. So they had no
weakness.
Those
running backs
are
stud.
It starts with those five, you know, offensive linemen, two of whom are coming out, maybe a third will come out. And eventually the younger kids might even be better than the guys leaving. But that offensive line just made for a field day for the more skilled players on Alabama. And
Lacey's going to be tough in the NFL next year. I like the way he plays. I like the way he runs, and he's nice. You know, Eddie Lacy is going to be something. And, look, C.J. Mosley's coming back. You know what's going to be interesting, though? Like, for example, like the left tackle, Texas A&M, Johnny Manziel's blindside, he's going to the NFL. But, you know, we know Alabama can, you know, sustain this. Can they three-peat, I guess, is the question. But Notre Dame, they're losing Teo, some other guys, but they've got the number one recruiting class, 12 of the top 150 ESPN recruits, and they've got the number two linebacker, this kid Smith, and then number two running back, and this kid Bryant. So can Notre Dame get the depth so they have rotations, and can they sort of continue to recruit Kelly's fourth year and sort of sustain and be dominant? And maybe they can, because they're getting players from Florida now. So I think that's going to be interesting, the running backs from Florida. So, you know.
It's possible, because you know why? They are in the situation where they don't have to play the SEC but once, right? They only have to beat them on any given whatever day of the week they decide to play the national championship, right? So they go through their regular season, which this year you thought would be difficult, but it turns out that the teams they played were almost all had down years, right? So they played Michigan, we thought was going to be good, not so great. They played Michigan State, same thing. They played, of course, their annual Stanford, you know, UCLA. They played all these teams, USC. They played all these teams, and they ended up all being on relatively down years, and then Barkley didn't even play in that final game against Notre Dame.
Which could have made a difference.
It could have. So I guess what I'm saying is Notre Dame, all they have to do is beat up on those, you know, Big Ten-type teams, where if they can be more athletic and then they have the experience of having gone 12-1, then all they have to do is in a one-game playoff, essentially, until we get to the plus one in a couple years, they just have to beat one SEC team, whether it's Georgia, whether it's LSU, whether it's Alabama, or somebody else, right? I don't know if it's, you know, preseason, you know, who the other teams could be. Maybe it's Oregon. But the point is they won't have to match a team in skill, size, and speed until they go to the national championship game, which they have, you know, 40, 45 days to prepare for. So in that respect, I'd almost rather put my money on a non-SEC team, because the SEC, they're going to beat up on each other. They got to go through the SEC. So even if you think an SEC team's going to win, you don't know which one, because they're going to beat up on each other, and they have to play the SEC championship game, and then they have to play somebody else for the national championship. So Notre Dame actually looks fairly good. I mean, they've got the recruiting class coming back. They've got a
TV contract.
Yep, they got a sophomore quarterback. They've got some skill position players coming back. So they're not, you know, it puts a sour taste in your mouth to be slapped around like that in the national championship game. But don't worry if you're an Irish fan. Things are looking good. Chip Kelly's got that ship sailing in a, you know, in a beautiful direction.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be fun, and we'll get more into, you know, college football and who goes to the draft and just different things. But let's talk about it, man. Let's talk about the fact that 2013 Hall of Fame class is nada. Nobody.
Zip zero.
Stingy with De Niro. You know, BGO had the highest percentage, 68, for, you know, and he's a first-time guy. I think what's sad, though, is somebody like Dale Murphy, you know, you could say he's probably not a Hall of Famer, but it was his last time. And now coming up on his last time next year with a great class of three no-brainers is Jack Morris.
Yep.
And, this whole steroid class of these guys, you know, which you have Bonds at 36, Clemens at 37%, Piazza, you know, in the 50s. But, you know, and he's only rumors, right? Piazza, there's some rumors he's by association. So I was surprised about Piazza, but – you know, Palmeiro's down to 8 and Sammy Sosa at 12. So these guys, they're not going to ever get in. And neither will McGuire. He dropped down. He's not a Hall of Famer. But the question is, I guess, that I have for you, because I don't really feel it. I think he's a compiler. Even though he's got the 3,000 hits, so that's like an automatic, Craig Biggio, 7 All-Stars, a 280 hitter, is he a Hall of Famer? You know, 19 years?
So... the downside is...
I know he played some catcher and some second base, but...
Yeah, the downside is that he's basically Don Sutton, you know, that's the argument on the pitcher side, where a guy averages, you know, 15 wins a year for 20 years to get his 300 wins, which used to be a sure thing for the Hall of Fame, 300 wins or 3,000 hits or 500 home runs. Look, to me, Craig Biggio put on his lunch pail... did work. He didn't really influence the game. You didn't pitch around Craig Biggio.
You never feared him.
Never feared him. So if there's ever a borderline Hall of Famer, it's Craig Biggio. But I still think that 7-time All-Star, even though it was in 19 seasons, right? Don't hate him because at the end of his career he was healthy enough to play 3 or 4 more years. Because if I told you he was 7-time All-Star in 14 seasons, you'd be like, oh, great, that's half of his seasons. So
it's still not that impressive to me.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I give it to him. I give it to him. I think offensively, the second base
But what about the
position,
rumors? What about the rumors? There's still rumors about Bagwell and Biggio.
Okay, so that's where you got to put this whole thing in perspective. And this is where I think you and I are pretty much in agreement here.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. So two forces at work here. One is this force, and I don't agree with either of them. One of them is this force that says, I won't vote you in as a first-time Hall of Famer. And to me, that's just ludicrous. That's childish. You know, if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. But they've segmented the Hall of Fame now into first-ballot Hall of Famers. So to me, it's ridiculous. If you think a guy like Craig Biggio, let's say, is a Hall of Famer, but he's not a first-ballot Hall of Famer, then you won't vote for him for a year or two, and then you'll vote for him afterwards because he doesn't deserve
it. That's the way that it is. So just,
I know. That,
you know,
and to me, that's ridiculous. But, you know, whatever. Baseball writers are baseball writers, so they tend to play these games amongst themselves. But the bigger issue this time around is like you said, the steroid and the rumor and innuendo. And here's my problem with this whole thing, is that how many people do we know did steroids? And so it's basically Mark McGuire, because he came out and admitted it, and Barry Bonds said they rubbed the clear on my knee and I didn't know it was steroids, but you're telling me it's steroids? Okay, it's steroids. So those
yeah,
are the, really the only
– yeah.
Nobody else – except for the people that were suspended, right? Manny Ramirez and a few other pitchers, you know,
Palmeiro.
Who are not going to be Hall of Fame material, and Palmeiro. Other than that, everything
and
else
Clemens.
Is rumored.
We know Clemens.
Well, yeah, but hold on. I'm getting to Clemens. Clemens didn't fail any drug tests, right? So we're taking the word of Brian McNamee and all
Pettit.
The now. And Pettit. Pettit did say, yeah, for his elbow.
And Pettit did it.
Okay. So there's three people who've admitted it, one person who's in, you know, very hot water, and the rest is suspicion. And then I'm going to bring you back to the whole Alex Rodriguez situation. So baseball and the players' union said a few years ago, they said, you know what, we don't know how big a problem we have. Let's randomly test Major League Baseball, people that are in the league and people that are kind of high AAA, and let's randomly test, again, randomly, let's figure out how bad a problem we have, and then based on that, in a collective bargaining environment, we'll decide what to do about testing and about discipline for drugs, right? But first, let's find out if we have a problem. So they did that, and remember that report came out that 104 people tested, and this was a random test, 104 people tested positive. And we know one name on that list, Alex Rodriguez, okay? So he's the fourth guy that we know for sure did it, right? So we know Alex Rodriguez tested positive. Okay, so there's 103 other people on that list that we don't know who did it. And frankly, we shouldn't, because if it was – I mean, look, it's got to be one way or the other. Either you reveal everybody or you reveal nobody.
Right, but now that we know A-Rod, we need to. Look, but –
So the fact that A-Rod –
And I totally agree with you.
That's illegal, but anyway.
No, definitely. But this is the biggest issue with it, right? And forget all that stuff. I think the biggest issue is between the writers, Hall of Fame, baseball commissioner. What we have to define is what do we do with this whole era? Because you're hurting the Hall of Fame and you're hurting Cooperstown when a whole generation says, wow, nobody that I saw play in my own eyes is going to be in the Hall of Fame, or near to nobody. Obviously, next year we'll have Maddox, Glavine, and Frank Thomas.
But
right?
Again, Maddox, Glavine, and Frank Thomas, are you sure that none of them did steroids?
No, we're not sure.
Not
that's,
sure.
And that's the problem. We're not sure. We assume no, but we're not sure, right? So what we have to do is we as a whole society have got to say, you know what, none of the people in the Baseball Hall of Fame are perfect. You know, even now, Fergie Jenkins came out that there's rumors that someone that made it in the last 5 years, you know, used steroids. Now, there's just rumors, so we don't know. We have to guess who that is. We don't know who it is. We have to guess, but there's rumors about that. So I just think for whatever the era is, right, if it's 92 to 2004 or 94 or 90 or 88 to 2004, we have to sort of define it, name it, and just say this is the steroid era, and then let in the guys that are deserving, you know, and not because of their boosted numbers, right? But, you know, I still think there's enough baseball intelligence for people to say, okay, Sosa, McGuire, no, they wouldn't have been Hall of Famers without the steroids. But, you know, like Fred McGriff, he gets penalized because he hasn't used steroids and his numbers look okay now, but they're still great numbers. But Fred McGriff was a great player for a long time.
Well, exactly. So that,
and
that,
you can debate Larry Walker. You know what I mean? So there's certain guys that, like, hey, you know, they need to get in. If Frank Thomas, 521 homers, he needs to get in, and he probably will next year. You know, but you know, it's messed up. But to me, you can't have a Hall of Fame to me without Clemens, Bonds, and Pete Rose. It's a farce. And it's not a real Hall of Fame if you don't have those three guys in, period.
Well, I agree with that. And I think the mea culpa has to come from baseball. I think Major League Baseball has to step up and say, you know what, it's been well documented. We have the Mitchell Report. This is an era of – make it even wider. Make it 20 years where we know that there were performance-enhancing substances. Take it out of the baseball writers' you know, sandbox, and just say to them, get them off the hook and say, you know what, it's all about what you did on the field between the white lines. Because, frankly, the pitchers were juiced up, the hitters were juiced up, so everybody was juiced up playing against each other. I'm not saying it all negates each other, because there are some people that fall out of this, right? So, like you said, if Freddie McGriff, in fact, didn't use steroids and he played against people who did, he's got a major beef. And then you got guys that are falling by the wayside, Jack Morris, and who knows what will happen with, you know, Tim Raines and these guys who maybe didn't use steroids. Again, maybe. I don't know who did and who didn't, who are going to lose out.
Let me ask you, is Tim Raines to you a Hall of Famer?
Rock Raines, I mean, yeah, he was one of the better base stealers. He, you know, he played outfield, he played defense, he
Expos,
played offense.
He was great.
You,
it's
you
just hard for me.
You were around Tim Raines. But okay, so I fill in the blanks. Take your favorite guy who's on the borderline. Now, with all the because there's two sides to the steroids coin, right? There's the guys who you know or suspect were steroided up, who had inflated numbers, and there's the guys who you pretty much thought didn't, who were on the borderline because their numbers weren't as gaudy as the people who were on steroids. So,
and then there's Bagwell, Biggio, and Piazza, where you're not sure.
Sure. So baseball needs to come out and release these. And I hate – and you know what? The sports writers are starting to be a little bit too holy, right? There are people in the Hall of Fame that are not nice guys. There are people in the Hall of Fame who use amphetamines. There's people in the Hall of Fame who cork their bats.
Racist,
other drug users.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about that. But I'm just talking about strictly on a baseball level, on a performance-enhancing level. There's people that cork their bats. There's people that – scuffed up the balls. There's people that
Gaylord Perry. He admitted
all of that.
He said, "I cheated."
Yeah. So let's not make this out to be
Pollyanna
Fire Boys. So I think it's got to come from baseball. It's got to say, look, you know, we know that we had a problem, and let's just get back to who was the best performer. Because you're right. What happens to the baseball fan? It's just you're just going to alienate the baseball fan that says to themselves, wait a minute, I grew up in an era where I saw Biggio, Bagwell, Morris, Piazza, you know, I'm assuming these guys are going to get in, but Maddox, Glavine, Thomas, Jeff Kent, and then obviously Clemens, Bond, Sosa, McGuire. And you're telling me that none of my guys are going to make the Hall of Fame? So it's as if 20 years went poof?
Yeah.
Like I didn't
and guess
have
what
it
does? It hurts Cooperstown. Their attendance is down. It's horrible. It hurts the businesses. I mean, come on. You got to, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, hold on.
It's,
we got a caller here. He might have something to say on this Hall of Fame matter.
Definitely. I blame the owners, too, though.
Oh, yeah. There's blame to go around for everybody. That's not the problem. Hello, caller. You're on the air?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How you doing?
What's going on, Hank?
You
got some baseball on your mind?
No, actually, no, because football is always on my mind. But
okay.
I'm gonna make this analogy, right? In football, nobody cares. Well, I shouldn't say that. No one really cares who does steroids or not, right?
You're
not
right?
Because
probably
we want
right
people
that,
to
yeah.
cheat. Not because we don't want people to cheat, right? But let's be honest, the steroid era is still going on, right? It's just different drugs that you can't test for. So one era is going to be the steroid era,
yeah,
and now it's
going
to be the HGH era, like they all do it. I think baseball is being a little too self-righteous because, look, they didn't have the rules in place and we should have. They all agreed that. But they improved the stats. So because guys are stronger and bigger and some offensive linemen are bigger and stronger, improves running games, and we're going to take away certain awards from them because that helped them during their careers. It, you know, just as a football fan, I find it a little too self-righteous. And I think that there's nothing that baseball can do about it except for when people do something stupid and they get caught to just fine them and take money away from them. But, like, you know, after guys are retired and whether you want to put them in the Hall of Fame or not, this whole debate to me is just a little bit of sort of baseball's righteousness, which is kind of misplaced.
Well,
so,
maybe one of the reasons why baseball slipped, you know, baseball used to be America's pastime for 50 years, 60 years, and now it's all about the NFL.
Yeah,
maybe
I mean, baseball's a great game. Baseball's a great game. I'm not trying to diss the game. But, you know, the impact of drugs on the game to ruin guys who are already retired. No, you're supposed to beef up the penalties and take away their money and their earning potential when they're supposed to make money. But to do it now, like years later, where everybody's debating, you know, whether guys who have retired 10 years ago or whatever the number is, whether they should get in the Hall of Fame or not, like, stop trying to do that because you're not going to know the truth. That's my whole thing. It's the same thing in football. Guys do steroids in football all the time or HGH. They get swole up, and, you know, it helps them play the game better. It helps them survive the game better. But unless someone gets caught in a test, don't make a big deal about it because the speculation is just going to kill you.
Right. And, you know, I totally agree with you in the premise. The problem is it's not just baseball and the owners and the commissioner that's sort of a Pollyanna. It is the Bob Costas. It is the Tom Berducci's. It's the baseball writers. It's the fans. It's the apple pie. It's America, right? So you're dealing with a mentality of where, you know, people still, you know, think, you know, oh, my government would never hurt me. You know, so when you have this whole mentality of, like, you know, just say, you know, oh, I believe, you know, in apple pie and America and baseball, instead of just being an adult and saying, you know what, nothing's perfect, we're all human, none of us are God, then, you know, that's so it's a whole society mental shift. And I just don't know if we're mature enough as a massive whole to sort of face that man in the mirror.
Yeah, well, I can't argue with
Michael
Jackson. Yeah, exactly. I just think until they do, we're going to be speculating forever about who did it and who didn't, right?
You're right.
Piazza's not dumb. Piazza's not dumb, right? What's he going to do? He's going to hold a press conference and say, look, I just want to let you know that I didn't do steroids yet, and he's going to have to wait the whole year to see if he's changed anybody else's mind for them to vote him in. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Everybody should just – I just think the sport should just move on. But they're not going to.
So,
they're not going
to.
Well, Hank, while we got you here, in case we don't get to talk to you for Friday, real quick – before playoff games, just give us your winners, man. What are you thinking?
See, this is tough because this is a notion of who do I want to win versus who's going to win. So
right.
my Super Bowl picks are still Denver and Green Bay. Okay? So I'm a little bit lucky this week because, right, the tougher games are in the championship games, right, about basically playing against New England. Well, I don't see any reason why they're going to lose this game unless – I don't know why. I just don't think Houston's got it, right?
Right.
So
– well, that's the Sunday game. So Texans and Patriots, who you got? So you got the Patriots in that one?
Yeah, I got the Patriots. Look, as you guys know, I'm a Miami fan, but, you know, playing in Foxborough, I mean, you're going to have to do something pretty special. And, you know, I don't see how Houston can do something that special in order to beat them in Foxborough.
And now Gronkowski's back, so, yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
what about,
I don't even know if Gronkowski matters, right? Because, look, Houston's not going to put up 55. They're not, right?
No, I'm just saying it makes it even harder for the Texans, that's all.
Yeah.
But they do have Brooks Reed back, and Brooks Reed did not play the first time they played the Patriots, and he definitely helps, I will say that.
Yeah, that's
okay, so you got
true.
The Pats.
You
want to
go game
one? Atlanta.
Yeah, and on the other side of the bracket, Ravens and Broncos. Who do you got on that game?
Okay, well, all right. Ravens and Broncos, I just don't think the Ravens are that good. It's great you played, emotionally against a rookie quarterback, but, you know, now you're playing a big boy. So I still think Denver's going to Super Bowl. And that means actually Denver beating New England next week. That's a whole other thing. I think the Seattle Atlanta game is the most interesting game, right? Because look, I love the weapons. Look, the Atlanta's strength this year is basically their weapons on the outside, right? It's Julius Jones, you know, and Roddy White. The problem is that's the strength of Seattle's defense, their corners. So that tells me that somebody else is going to have to step up. And unless you think, you know, that their running back is going to put up 150, I think that's an awfully tough game for Atlanta to win. And that's even if they're at home. If Atlanta wins this game, they showed me something that I haven't seen the whole year. And I don't know if they're quite there yet. So I'm actually taking Seattle on that game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Green Bay.
And then
Green Bay
Saturday
Niners.
Night game. Yeah. Green Bay.
Here's
49ers.
Yeah. Now this is the tough one, right? Because obviously I want my picks to work, and I want Green Bay to win, right? You know, that's just. But from a pure, like, if I had no axe in the game, I mean, you guys tell me, right? I mean, is the addition of Woodson on the defense actually going to make sure that Green Bay stops people? Because I know they can score, right?
It helps.
It definitely helps. But is that
it's more
look,
about
if you
Green
think
Bay's
that
offensive
comes,
line to me?
Well, is it? It hasn't
is.
Been
you
good for
why?
two
because
years.
I I think Green Bay's defense and Kaepernick, you know, go back and forth, whatever. But to me, if the Niners can hold Green Bay to, let's say, they last time it was 22 points, let's say they hold them to 21 or 20, the Niners are going to win this game because Kaepernick has brought a new dimension, and Crabtree is now
a
number
agree.
One receiver.
So I agree. So you really think they're going to be able to hold Green
line.
Bay?
Yeah. I'm going with the Niners, but, you know, we'll talk about that on Friday, but.
Okay.
You know what? I can't argue with you. It's just I'm wondering, like, Green Bay's offensive line hasn't been good for the last 2 years. So, you know, maybe that's why they haven't been in the Super Bowl in the last 2 years. Maybe that's the issue. I don't know.
Yeah.
I struggle with that game. I struggle.
All right. Well, listen, man, we got to keep it moving.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Hank. And,
yep. Have a good one. I'll see you next week.
All right.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thanks. So. We got to go to the NBA. And
yeah, let's take a quick trip around the NBA.
We got to talk about these Lakers, Ray. 15-19, the Gasol
and they play
with a
San
concussion.
Antonio tonight.
Yeah, and they lost to Houston last night. They go to San Antonio tonight. The back-to-back for an older team, holding it down, Kobe, Nash, and Meta World Peace. But no Howard. Hopefully Jordan Hill comes back. No Gasol. You know, they're 11th right now in the Western Conference. Are the Lakers going to make the playoffs?
Well, you heard what Steve Nash said today. Playoffs? You heard what Steve Nash said today. He said, yeah, you know, there's some things we could work on defense, maybe in the offseason. In the offseason, Kobe, you're 39. Kobe's 34 in his 17th year. You don't have an offseason. You got to get it done now. So the Lakers.
Is Kobe pulling his hair out? This is why Kobe went to Twitter, right? Kobe's losing his mind right now. Kobe, Black Mamba's on Twitter. He's losing his mind.
Well, a couple
this
of
is
quick
ridiculous.
Statistical shout-outs here. Steve Nash crossed 10,000 assists yesterday.
Congrats.
And congrats to
he
him.
Joins the club.
He joins the 10,000 club. There's five other members. He's about to pass Magic. He's about 145 assists behind Magic, so he'll catch him before the All-Star break to be the number four all-time assist leader. He'll probably catch Mark Jackson by the end of the year, and then he'll just have Jason Kidd and John Stockton ahead of him.
Which he might not catch.
Which he might not catch. Then you have our boy.
Chigga James.
James Harden. We need to write an apology letter to James. Dear James. Ray and Tay apologizes because in our NBA preview, we kept saying he's not a max player. I mean, he's Mad Max. He's so much of a max player so far. He scored 31 last night. He had his 13th 25-point game in a row, and that ties a franchise record for the Houston Rockets held by one Moses Malone. Or as our boy Zinkoff in Philly used to say, Moses Malone. So, James Harden
that's
is
ridiculous.
The real deal. And, you know, kudos to him. I mean, he just needed to leave the same town that Kevin Durant was playing in and then just go flourish on his own. Durant Westbrook and flourish on his own.
Under someone's shadow. You know, and sometimes change like that helps players, right? Sometimes, you know, you're the third wheel on your team, and then you're asked to be number one. Doesn't mean you can't do it. Sometimes you just need the opportunity. I mean, he's fourth in the league in scoring, 26.6 a game. LeBron's 26.4. Durant, 28.2. Our mega man, Carmelo, at 29. And Kobe at 30.2 a game. So those five guys are really battling for MVP. And it's going to come down to the wire because they're all playing amazing, right? Kobe's
Another quick shout out to Reggie Evans. You know, all these guys get the pub, but sometimes you just need that dude that gets his rebounds, like the Charles Oakleys and the Mike
crazy horse
of the world, just like So Reggie Evans was all boards last night. He had 23 rebounds in 27 minutes. He basically sat out the whole fourth quarter because the Nets blew him out. And by the way, doesn't that Nets team look rejuvenated under P.J. Carlissimo? And
look at Darren
looking
Williams
good
now,
in January,
right?
Undefeated so far, and playing up to their potential, and hopefully they'll get it together and you know, get on
but
the
also
run.
Good for P.J., right? Good for P.J. I mean, this is someone who, you know, is a basketball legend and been around the game and been through, you know, a lot of ups and downs. And it's good to see him, you know, maybe since Phil said he's not going to probably come back and coach, PJ does a good job, maybe turns his team around. Maybe PJ will get to stay on and be the coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Why not? 20-15, they're on a roll. I think what's interesting, and just like you and I talked when we had a caller a couple, you know, like last week or so, look, the Celtics, they're not going anywhere. I don't even want to hear about Philly and Detroit and that foolishness. Boston Celtics, you know, I mean, beating Indiana, Atlanta, and then New York, they're 17-17. The Celtics are going to be fine. They are warriors, and they set a statement at MSG at the Garden the other night, and they're just they're putting the Knicks and everybody else in the Eastern Conference on notice. The two teams you do not want to see in the playoffs, Derrick Rose and the Chicago Bulls, and the healthy, 100% healthy Boston Celtics. And, oh, by the way, the Knicks might sign Kenyon Martin to a 10-day contract. Kenyon Martin. So that would be interesting, you know,
yeah,
since Rasheed's not
true.
Back yet. And our man Shumpert, yo, he came back to practice, full contact. I'm loving it.
Yeah, Iman Shumpert is back. And, oh, and by the way, John Wall, they're saying, might play Saturday against Atlanta. So Washington, D.C. gets a little pick-me-up. You know, RG3 goes down, but hopefully John Wall comes back on Saturday. That team really.
And the Wizards are playing better, right, with Nene back. And, you know, if they get healthy, you know, they got talent on the team. You know, obviously they're not there. But Bradley Beal, with the buzzer beater the other night, Bradley Beal is starting to, you know, step up and play some ball. But I got to say, look at the job, and he just got the extension. Frank Vogel's doing it in Indiana. 21-14 without Granger. Granger comes back. The Pacers, they were tough. They gave the Heat all they could handle last year in the playoffs as well, just like Boston did. Don't sleep on this Pacer team either, right?
No, especially if they get Granger back, because I'm a big fan of you need somebody in the half court in the fourth quarter of a playoff
he could score.
Game to create
yep.
his own shot. And Danny Granger is that guy, because right now George and Hill and Hibbert and David West, they can't do that, but Danny Granger can. So, yeah, big fan of Danny Granger. So get back soon. We want to see that Indiana team at full strength.
Yeah, you know, and I still marvel at Durant and Westbrook. They keep rolling, right, and even with Martin, and he missed a game or two. But 26-8, Ray. OKC, yeah, it makes you wonder, did the Olympics and the experience of losing last year, could they now be ready to get over the hump with an improved Ibaka who played in the Olympics as well? Can they, you know, face the Heat or the Knicks or whoever? But is OKC at that place where now they're like, you know what? We smelled it. We tasted it. We saw LeBron hold it up. Now let's go get it. Because Durant, he's playing out of his mind.
The only problem with them is, you know, inside scoring, and hopefully Serge Ibaka, you know, develops into that inside scorer, because, you know, Collison and Perkins can't give him that. And the other problem for them is not their fault, but it's like the SEC, right? Who comes out of the SEC? Well, who comes out of the West? Because for them, not you're talking about beating the Heat and beating the Knicks, they got to win three series in the West. So, you know, that's not trivial either. I mean, right now, if they're
Memphis,
the two seed, they'd have to go through Portland, which would be the 7. And then they'd have to beat the San Antonio Memphis winner, right? So that's not trivial to then play, let's say, you know, let's play San Antonio Houston.
Clippers.
And then they play the Clippers. So can they beat Portland, San Antonio, and the Clippers, let's say?
And you know what's so funny?
They obviously
can't.
But
you know what's so funny? As
series.
We say that, but wait, as you say that out loud, I tell you, yes, with ease.
I don't know about
with
ease.
Complete
Each
ease.
Of those teams gives them a different look. I think the Clippers now know what they need to do in the playoffs. I think that the San Antonio Spurs, they're always dangerous because of the way they're coached. And you know, they ran out of gas. But essentially, they were up 2-0. And if they hadn't run out of gas in the second half of that third game, and they go up 3-0, then – you know, we wouldn't have seen the Oklahoma City Thunder in the
finals. I think they can beat the Spurs in 6. The question to me is the Clippers, only because that team is so deep, and my boy DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin have improved a lot on the defensive end, and even, you know, a little bit more offensively. And then when you throw in the veterans of Billups, Odom, Crawford, and you have CP3, and then Matt Barnes. I mean, they just keep coming. Ronny Turiaf. I mean, that team, they, when they are healthy and 100%, and I don't know when that's going to be, and then you throw in a Grant Hill, that Clipper team has the potential to really win it all. You know, they just have a little bit of everything. I would say they could still use a Reggie Evans, but they're going to be tough. They're going to be tough.
Yeah, well, let's take a little break and come back with our Where You At segment.
Well, you know what? I wanted to do, we'll take a little break, but even before we jump into Where You At, I just want to give college basketball some love because, man, there were some interesting games, and it's the perfect, you know, perfect little segue. So we'll be right back, Ray and Tay.
Meet a mommy, then a kaki. Come over here and dance with me.
On,
I see your body look so heavenly.
Yeah.
Baby girl, you're delicious to me.
Bala
papa ball, part of me. I'm the type that's right, and my game is tight. And I see, baby girl, you're looking all right. So what you got?
We're back, and we're back to talk a little college basketball. It's not March yet, so the madness hasn't started. But
no,
we're college, it's
heating up though, Ray. Is he not? But listen,
I
got emotional last night because I think I might have seen the last time Pitt plays at Georgetown. Now, Pitt, you know, they got some players, and Jamie Dixon's a great coach, and Georgetown was ranked 19th, and Pitt handled them, right? But it's more about the end of the Big East, you know, Pitt and Syracuse going to the ACC, maybe the start of the Catholic Seven. But I just... You know, there were some good games, you know, and obviously Duke's still number one, and they won last night. It blew out, you know, that team.
They blew out Clemson. But here's the
Clemson.
Thing, but Kelly got hurt, though. Kelly hurt his foot, and they really need him. He was the missing piece last year. So Cook goes out and scores 27 after going, putting up an 0 for
career
his
high
scores.
For him.
Yeah, he was something like 0 for 9 the game before against Wake, and then he scores 27. That just shows you how, you know, college kids can be up and down. He's only a sophomore. But Cook got hurt, so hopefully he'll be back because you want Duke to be at full strength.
And Missouri, their leading scorer got hurt too. When Missouri beat Alabama.
Yeah, he's out at least a couple games. Alex Oriaki's helping give them some size up front. You know, he transferred from Connecticut.
Yeah, great transfer. You know, that was interesting. But just real quick, right, so Duke's number one. You have Michigan at number two. Louisville, DeVille, and Patino at three. Arizona, four. Our boys, preseason number one, Indiana, five. Kansas, six. Syracuse, DeCusa, seven. Missouri. Now, see, this is what's so interesting. This Missouri team with Oriaki, they're going to be nice. But, Minnesota at 8, Gonzaga at 9, and Missouri at 10. This is going to be, you know, you could see any of those teams at the end. And then what hurts for Ray and I, for those who don't know, our 10-4 Tar Heels look horrible. They look ridiculously overrated and bad, you know. I mean, we'll be lucky to get back in the top 25 anytime soon, you know. McAdoo is not the answer. I don't know what's going on.
You're rebuilding here. Look, it's not written in stone that Carolina is the top five team every year. So sometimes you rebuild and reload. It's okay. It's the nature.
It's frustrating, right? It's just frustrating. And, you know, we got some good games this weekend with Ohio State, Michigan, and Ohio State is 15. And they had a nice win at Purdue last night, so... You know, it's one of those things, and listen, we got to let the audience know, man. Monday, we're gonna have a big show, and look out for that. We'll be telling people about it and putting it up everywhere. But we'll have Seth Davis talking some college hoops from Sports Illustrated and CBS Sports.
Yeah.
Hold on, we got a quick caller.
Let's see if we can pull in a quick caller before we go in our Where Are You At segment.
Yeah, before we talk about our man from UCLA.
Yeah. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, guys, this is Mike in Pittsburgh. I called the show before. How are you guys doing this evening?
Hey, Mike, what's going on?
Happy New Year.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Well, good. Thank you. Now, tell me, guys, if you think I'm bad here. I'm a diehard Cowboys fan, and I'm not shedding any tears for RG3 at all.
I understand.
My thinking, guys, is 10 years we were going to have to deal with this guy dominating the division, you know, running all over the place, you know. And I kind of feel bad, but in a way I feel relieved, you know. I don't think the Redskins next year, even if he comes back, he's going to be able to go into this pistol formation and run the ball, run the option. He's going to have to change his game completely. And I would just like your thoughts, guys. Do you guys think I'm wrong thinking, you know, that I won't say happy for RG3. I don't wish injury on anybody, but kind of relieved that we don't have to deal with this guy at
least.
Well,
don't worry. Not so fast. Not so fast.
Yeah,
he did
AP blow his ACL
back
in 2009. So
yeah,
it's the second
no
time
guarantee
he's done this.
Yeah. There's no guarantee that he won't be. Maybe he won't be 100% next year. Maybe it's, you know, 80. Maybe it's 93. You just don't know. So don't count your chickens before they hatch. What you really need to worry about is getting rid of Rob Ryan and who you're going to hire. And then are you going to let Jason Garrett stop calling the plays and maybe bring in North Turner? That's what you need to worry about.
Wait, amen to that. Trust me, guys. I know as a Cowboys fan, you know, we have our problems. And I'm the toughest critic. But, you know, just back real quick to RG3, I think the thing that's going to help is they're going to have to change their offensive system completely. And he's not going to be able to run. You know, he's going to turn more into, a pocket passer. They just won't let him run around like they have this year.
Right. He had 120 rushes. I think that they should knock it down to 60 or 80. We'll see what happens. But also remember, Morris is a beast. They have Fred Davis hopefully coming back healthy, Garcon, and then maybe they get another receiver and some offensive line in the draft, and he is still a good pocket passer. So you still got a lot to worry about.
The one guy I would say to remember is Randall Cunningham, who in the beginning of his career, you know, came out of UNLV and was a great runner, and then he tore his ACL and ended up having his best years, MVP-type years, at the end of his career in Minnesota when he was throwing to Randy Moss and Chris Carter. So RG3 doesn't have those weapons, but RG3 is a good enough pocket passer where he can build his leg strength in due time, and he's still something to worry about. I mean, this guy is the real deal. So as a Cowboy fan, I hear you, and I'm a Cowboy fan too. I don't wish injury on anybody, and he might have to modify his game, but I'm fearful actually that he modifies his game in a way that gives him more longevity and makes him better overall quarterback. So believe it or not, you know, no injury is good, but this could be a blessing in disguise to happen early in his career and then make it so that he doesn't go for that extra 5 yards. He takes a knee, he goes out of bounds, he slides. So he might end up being a better quarterback in the long run, a little less explosive, but a better and more effective quarterback, because ultimately the quarterback has to beat you from the pocket. I don't know that any quarterback has run his way to a Super Bowl. Even Steve Young, who had great legs, ultimately beat you because he had, you know, his 101 passer rating, you know, in the prime of his career. So
from
he's
pocket,
beating you
yeah.
from the pocket.
So,
yeah,
thanks, Mike.
Just a final comment real quick, guys. That was a great comparison to Randall Cunningham. I didn't even think about that. And just to throw it in there, you're a Cowboys fan. You remember Randall Cunningham going against the Cowboys in the early 90s. We owned the Eagles. We put them out of the playoffs about two or three times. So good comparison. Love the show. You guys take care.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Take care, Mike. Talk to you soon.
All right. So now, Wednesday, where you at? We hit you up. Ray and I dug in the crates. We threw on our DJ gloves, the little turntables. You know, we got our techniques.
We put the yellow, you know, that yellow filler in the 45, you know, to make it fit in the 43. You know, that little piece of yellow plastic, whatever that was called.
And we went to someone who is really like our era. We saw him play. He was born in 1966 on a nice kind of warm day on May 14th, maybe not too warm because it was in Philadelphia. His government name is Jerome, but we know him as Pooh Richardson from UCLA. Jerome Pooh Richardson,
Ben Franklin
Jr.
High School in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Jerome Pooh Richardson.
So Why don't you break down a little bit of the college? For those who don't know, point guard, what was he, six? About 6'1".
6'1", 180, kind of a slender dude,
yeah.
but tough because he's from the streets of Philly, you know.
And very, very aggressive, solid.
Which was
yeah,
a big-time recruit for Walt Hazard, right? Walt Hazard
yes.
went over to Philly, got him. He was a highly recruited guy, but to bring him over to UCLA was a big deal. He goes over to UCLA. He plays with Reggie Miller for a couple years. He's
yeah.
a three-time All-Pac-10 performer. So he's at UCLA from 85 to 89. He's a three-time All-Pac-10 performer. He is the UCLA career leader in assists and assists in his career and assists in a game. So he's at 833 career assists. He's still top 20 in college basketball all-time in assists. That's also because he stayed 4 years, right? So that stat is a little skewed. But he was the man, you know. You remember him, Jerome Poole Richardson, you know, controlling
well, him
the
and
game.
Reggie
the floor
had the
general.
Best backcourt. I think,
yeah,
Ray,
nice.
They were definitely one of the best backcourts.
Was a senior.
Yeah,
that
I think
was nice.
That was one of the best backcourts that year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He goes to UCLA. He does his thing. They didn't really have much success as a team, UCLA did. So he had Walt Hazard was his coach for 3 years, and then he got fired, and they brought Jimmy Harrick in after his junior year where they didn't make the tournament. They brought Harrick in, and then that was the era where Harrick goes for 6 or 7 years, ends up winning that, ends up winning the championship in the mid-90s with the O'Bannon brothers. But he played with Harrick for 1 year, and then he goes out to the NBA. And in 1989, the number
drafted by the new franchise.
He's the number 10 overall pick for the Minnesota Timberwolves. So he plays in the NBA for 10 years. He goes from 89 to 92 with the T-Wolves, 92 to 94 with the Pacers, 94 to 99 with the Clippers. Has a pretty solid NBA career. So
he played with Reggie again too at Indiana. You know.
Yeah. Sure, he comes back and plays with Reggie. So he had 11 points per game, 6.5 assists, 2.8 rebounds. So in a 10-year career, not bad, 11 and 6.5 for a point guard.
And, you know, he was solid, didn't really turn it over too much, could boogie. The jump shot was never pure. He could get to the hole and dish. I mean, hey, 11.6 assists, you know, definitely a serviceable point guard. But, you know, it's just one of those guys that, you know, Ray and I be like, yo, where is Pooh at, you know? And anybody knows, you know, could send us some stuff. Anybody knows Pooh, you know, I don't know if he, you know, could be coaching or just, you know, he's 46 now, just enjoying his family. But Pooh Richardson was a great, great player when you saw him play. You know, wasn't, you know, he's not a Hall of Famer for college or NBA, but he's just a Hall of Famer in our minds.
He's also,
you know,
one of those
that's
inner city point guards. Like, of course, we grew up in New York, so we had a bunch of them. So these inner city point guards, who was a playground legend, like I said, Ben Franklin High School, shout out to Philadelphia.
Man,
an East Coast point guard. You know, there's this whole thing where the West Coast point guards were a little bit more, you know, sort of played a different style. So East Coast point guard from inner city, you know, Philadelphia, goes out to Westwood, plays you know, for UCLA, that storied franchise, but always had that, you know, like, I'm a tough guy point guard mentality. I'm the leader. I'm the point guard. I run the show, even though, you know, in the beginning of his career, he had Reggie Miller. The end of his career,
I don't know
Donnie
if you remember,
McClain.
He had the high dribble. Remember, he sort of dribbled high.
Of course.
And he had a nice spin move, too. Poole could spin and kind of dip it on you at the basket, you know.
Yeah, so good for him. So, yeah, he was a pleasure to watch. Like I said, I saw a couple highlights of him in high school and then eventually followed him to UCLA and then to the pros. So on this Wednesday, where you at, we say what's up and thanks for some enjoyment to Jerome Poole Richardson. Fun to watch.
Yeah, man. So, listen, we'll be back Friday. Obviously, it's going to be a big football show. We'll, you know, go around the NBA and, you know, see what happens. But we are definitely going to be talking football in these divisional playoffs, and you will hear Ray and Tay's picks. Also, look out, you know, from us and vote, you know, for your rookie of the year. Now we're going to, you know, I'm going to let everybody see, you know, who they feel for coach of the year, defensive player, all the awards, and we'll have it on Friday, February 1st, the Ray and Tay Awards, our first awards
for
the NFL season.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for spending an hour with us. We had a great time. Thanks for calling in. Keep calling.
Yeah, thanks for the callers. Mike
Ray
and Hank
Tate,
and everybody else. Talking sports with friends.